Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
It's NFL music, but it also reminds me of Christmas music for some reason.
The bells. Yes. Carol of the Bells.
I love it. You know I love Christmas music. I'll listen to it in July. I'm not scared.
You like the Carpenters.
Yes, Christmas I do. Music. Karen Carpenter, voice of an angel.
You know who's really good? Elvis. Elvis's Christmas album.
Yeah, it's got some
fantastic.
Good stuff. It's got some good stuff. You know who else loves Christmas music? John Clayton.
John Clayton.
Right, John?
Certainly. But, of course, Christmas music is NFL music because, again, NFL's playing on Christmas Day, and so it all sings together.
Yep, it certainly does. Hey, John, Dave and I had a really cool hypothetical earlier that we want you to play along with. If you could pick any three players and put them on the – any three from any other team, money's no object – and put them on this Seahawks roster, which three would you take?
Well, I mean, Aaron Donald, certainly.
That's a consensus.
We're 4-for-4, John.
Yeah, so it's like
Mark Schlereth said it, Bob said it, I said it.
Yeah, how can you not say that? Then maybe T.J. Watt and, maybe Derrick Henry.
Okay.
Derrick Henry's a good one. T.J. Watt, though, he's an outside linebacker.
Yeah,
3-4
outside linebacker.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a good player.
Yeah, I'm with Travis Kelce.
Oh, how about J.R. Alexander, cornerback of Green Bay, or Tre'Davious White of the Buffalo Bills?
Well, we had a guy last name White that Dave is a big fan of.
Yeah, linebacker. And John Schlereth, or I'm sorry,
Mark
Schlereth. and Mark Clayton.
Did he go for Quentin Nelson?
No, I thought about doing that. And Lefko? Lefko went with Quentin Nelson. Now, I picked Corey Linsley was one of mine, John, because, it's obviously team specific. Otherwise, you'd take Mahomes probably. But we have Russell Wilson here, but he needs a center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was kind of when we were going through that. You mentioned Quentin Nelson. And you look at their offensive line, John, their other guard, Mark Glowinski.
Mm-hmm.
And he was here, and one of those guys, we haven't really talked about that because, there has been some, you've got to spend your money, and I know the Seahawks are trying and everything, but that's a tough one to see on that really good offensive line, and that was a guy that was here that got cut.
Yeah, agreed. And that's why James Carpenter, is going to get let go. But, he didn't do some bad things for the Atlanta Falcons when he was there. It didn't really materialize here.
Yeah.
But, he did. Well, sometimes the guys you look back on can go out and do a pretty good job.
Well, and I would say this. I think those guys had Tom Cable.
Right.
So, it's not the current, with Mike Solar, it's not the current coach. So that at least makes you feel a little bit better.
Yeah. Again, you guys can text in any questions you've got for John, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, and we'll try to get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. But we're starting to see players get released, John, and the latest would be DeSean Jackson, who called himself the greatest deep threat in NFL history coming to a city near you, is what he posted on Instagram. 34 years old, a guy who can't stay healthy. What's the market like for him?
Not much. I mean, he'll get something, but it's probably going to be in that $4 to $5 million range on a one-year deal because I don't think he's going to be able to command the big dollars. I mean, he still has the speed, but you're right about the age and the health. That's a big issue. But you knew he was going to be let go. And so, once again, it looks like they're in the process of unloading their entire offense because, they already worked out deals that Alshon Jeffrey, the wide receiver, is going to be a June 1st cap casualty. He's reworked his contract to accommodate that. Then Zach Ertz is being shopped around. And so you already know that Carson Wentz went to Indianapolis. And so it's kind of messy there. And, with their cap situation as bad as it is, there's still going to be more changes.
I heard some debate going on today, and two guys, one was on one side, one on the other, but that Carson Wentz, one believed that he's going to entirely reemerge as a good starting quarterback because is he going into the best situation? I mean, as far as they've got a good running game there,
good
defense, a good offensive line.
Good coach.
And a coach he's familiar with.
And a coach he's familiar with. I mean, and all of a sudden it started to convince me. I mean, I haven't been just blown away by Carson Wentz, but that guy's got to be really happy because he's going into a good situation and with Howie Roseman and Philly. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was definitely a bad, turned out to be a bad
season. And you see the one story today that came out that Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz didn't talk for like a period of 8 to 10 weeks. Did not have one single conversation.
What is that about? Was there, because he got benched? Was there, why would you not speak with your head coach?
Well, and of course, if going 8 to 10 weeks, this certainly tells you, because he was benched later in the season, that this had to start sometime in the middle of the season or thereafter, that before he was benched. And so what happened in the relationship, it's hard to say, but maybe Doug being critical, Carson being obstinate and not really wanting to work as hard as you would like, losing leadership in the locker room, all those different things. But, it was as messy of a situation as you can find.
Now, I have to believe that that was mostly on Carson Wentz, because Doug Peterson's a grown man.
Coach just going to shut out, even if they don't like a player, they're not going to just shut him out and say, I'm not speaking to him?
No. Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of...
Sean McVay might have done it if they kept Jared Goff around for him.
Yeah, he wasn't happy with him. No. But, I mean, yeah, Doug Peterson is a grown-up, and, I could see Carson Wentz getting his feathers ruffled, and, I'm not going to talk to him. But, I mean, I'm sure it was a one-sided deal, because there's no way Doug Peterson is not going to talk to him.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree, because, again, it's like, this is the head coach. Doug's the one calling the plays. I guess you could say they didn't talk during the week, but they had to talk for 3 hours on a Sunday or 3 hours on a Monday night or wherever the game time was. I mean, that was the conversation. But, of course, Carson's not answering back.
You think Pete would ever not talk to Russ?
No.
Maybe if he makes one more comment about his offensive
line. Could be. Yeah.
Given you the silent.
It's kind of like Marshawn and Pete, because what they went for a long period of time, and Pete would maybe want to talk to Marshawn, but Marshawn wouldn't return any conversation.
I was going to say, I'd put that one on Marshawn.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
You think
that would feel fairly obvious?
He was kind of treating Pete Carroll like the media.
Yeah. Hey, John, I'm reading the story about an interview our buddy Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest did with Jarran Reed. And they were talking about Reed acknowledged the possibility he could be one of the many players released from their clubs this time of year. He's got 1 year remaining on the 2-year deal. And his quote is, who knows? I want to be here long term for sure. I just control what I can control and everything will work itself out. I've been a Seahawk my whole career and that's how I want it to stay. What's the realistic chance that they would release Jarran Reed?
I don't think so, because, again, it's a talent acquisition business, not one where you want to let players go. But, certainly if they have to have cap casualties, I mean, he's probably sitting in the number two hole. Carlos Dunlap is going to be number one. And, if can they find a replacement as good as him? Because, again, he did have the 10.5 sack season. I mean, you saw when Dunlap got here, that opened things up because they had to move some people over to help block him, and that gave him the ability to rush the passer. But, $11.5 million for a defensive tackle that can stop the run and has pass rush ability, that's very reasonable. And so I guess, nobody knows for sure. Nobody knows what the cap's going to be. It's going to be 180, 185, 188. The higher the number, the better it is for keeping as much of this team together. But again, I think the emphasis is going to be try to see what you can keep together, but also what John Snyder is going to be doing with all these players being cut. And I've already put together a list of 120. And so far, either maybe Mike Pallady, the punter from Carolina, is the only one that I've missed on so far. And so, it's going right down the line. The interesting thing is that this is a trend I never expected to see. You're actually seeing unrestricted free agents on multi-year contracts being released from last year. I mean, for example, Ricky Wagner had signed a 2-year contract. Green Bay let him go. They very well let Preston Smith, I think he's going to be out of there. Remember, he came over 2 years ago. Today, they let another one go. And, Steve Weathersley from the Carolina Panthers, he was let go. So, again, we're seeing a lot of guys who just got Christian Kirksey, linebacker they signed, after they lost Blake Martinez. He's thinking about retiring, so they let him go. So what you're seeing is the trend. And I even had this in my 120 players getting cut, that there's going to be a lot of these type of moves.
Hmm. Hey, John, you talk to a fair amount of agents, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those guys, I mean, they've got to be prepping their players for realistic expectations, things like that. I kind of like that Jarran Reed said that. I mean, it shows an awareness of, hey, you know, you understand that the cap took a hit and that teams are tight and everything, but you know, these agents, they're doing a good job of prepping these guys for what's coming, right?
You would think. I mean, if they're building them up thinking they're going to get big dollars, they're going to be wrong. And because you can overestimate the mark. Now, again, you're going to have maybe 10 to 15 players that may get their true value. Like, for example, Jamal Adams could very well get the value because, I mean, he deserves to be the highest paid safety. And so as long as he doesn't want to get pass rush numbers, then he should be the highest paid safety. You know that Trent Williams is going to get $20-plus million as the left tackle. You know that Shaq Barrett in Tampa Bay is going to get top dollar. But you start to go around and you see, all right, it's going to be tough for everybody else to get that. That's why the market is going to be so diminished. And, you know, if you're John Snyder, it's like, you know, you're going to be, you know, shopping and hoping that maybe if you need to replace somebody, you can get somebody at a lower price who's still a very good player, because there's going to be a lot of good players in the street. I mean, even like we talk about DeSean Jackson today, I mean, he's still a pretty good player. He just wasn't healthy.
Hey, don't you think Carlos Dunlap would be one of those guys that knows that? I mean, he comes in understanding in this year he was, what is he on the books for, $14 million or something like that? So is that, do you think that's a conversation Pete and John would have with him when they brought him over? Like, hey, we're excited to have you here. We'd love to keep you. Obviously, we're going to have to address this next year's salary. Or do you think that's something they just put off until this year? Or, I mean, he must know. I'm not getting that payday.
Well, remember, when he came here, he did work out a contract where he pushed some money back into this 2021 season. So he recognizes that, and I think that he should be smart enough to realize, okay, what's going to happen with me? He's like, okay, I might have to take a pay cut down to $6 million, but if he's going to be on the street in his mid-30s thinking he's going to get $10, $11 million, then he's being foolish, because that's just not going to happen. And so I think that he's in a position to try to work something out. And then what does help is that he worked something out the first days he got here. And again, that raised the cap for this year, but you know, he put it in a roster bonus. I think he's got like an $11-plus million roster bonus. And, you know, I think that there's something there that they can work out, because they can probably put him on a 2-3 year deal. What we're going to see is it's going to be mostly 1 and 2 year deals. Like I mentioned yesterday, there was only like about 10 that we saw as far as 4 and 5 year deals, and 3-year deals and 32 2-year deals. And everything else was 1 year deals and unrestricted free agency.
John, we were talking earlier about weapons for Russell Wilson and, you know, whether or not they get a receiver. I mean, they have, I think, the number one duo as far as yardage goes anyway. Mm-hmm. Both DK and Lockett with 2,357. Next closest, I think, was Jefferson and Thielen in Minnesota.
Right.
But yeah, I don't anticipate that. I feel like that with the year that David Moore had, I could see them bringing in a tight end and certainly emphasizing that position much more than I can, you know, with receivers. There's also, you know, John Ursua out there. Bob mentioned, what about Freddie Swain? I mean, it seems like they're okay, you know. They always want to add competition, but I feel like they're pretty set at wide receiver.
And of course, I mean, David Moore is an unrestricted free agent, so they got to figure that out. But when I was going through, because I finally was able to catch up on the future contracts today, is that and getting him under the database, is that, I mean, John Ursua did resign. So he's now on the roster for 2021 if he can make the team. And also they re-signed Josh Gordon. So again,
really?
he gave him a contract for next year. I'm sure it's a minimum salary deal, but so those two guys are on the roster right now, and so those options are already there, and I'm sure that you're going to see, you know, some bargains. Like I'm kind of wondering, I know he was making, I got a $10 million cap number. There's going to be Jamison Crowder from the Jets. He's going to be let go. Maybe Robbie Anderson from the Carolina Panthers. He can be let go. It just depends on the price is going to be.
So Josh Gordon has been signed by the Seahawks.
That's correct.
That's amazing.
He's still under suspension, but.
Was he officially suspended? I don't even know where he's at now.
He's suspended. I mean,
so, but there's no, obviously we haven't heard, it's 8 games, it's 2 games, it's five, nothing.
No.
So do the Seahawks do that with the knowledge or some level of insight that says, hey, he's probably going to be able to play after X amount of games? Or do they just say, let's just do it just in case?
Let's just do it just because, again, it shows that, you know, he can have a home and that home would be Seattle. It's the place that he wanted to be, and you know, that's one that was kind of interesting because I'm going through the Josh Gordon resigned. How about that?
So he's but they're not on the hook for anything.
Nah.
Unless he's able to play.
No. I mean, I know they were on the hook for the signing bonus that he had, and I think it was $137.5, and but that's already counted in last year's cap. Again, because I was working on the signings, I haven't worked on the numbers yet. That'll start tomorrow. But, yeah, just going through all that, I was kind of surprised that you know, they did sneak that in.
But just to clarify, sorry, Dave, just to clarify, this costs them nothing unless he steps onto the field.
That's correct.
Okay. They're just saying if he plays football, he's going to be
playing for us.
He's under contract.
I got
you. If he's playing football, he's under contract in Seattle.
Okay.
He's not going to leave in free agency.
Right. And so, and they didn't, you know, count on him last year or anything. It's not like it hurt them or anything. I mean,
I'll be surprised if we see that guy play again, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Do you think he plays again, John?
Who knows? I mean, this is one of those unanswerable questions because, again, we went through the entire second half of the year last year, and there was no update. Nobody could say anything. And so we just don't know.
It's one of those questions that continually gets texted in here, and we're like, we can't. Boy, Xavien Howard, Miami got their money's worth. 10 interceptions for their corner down there. I mean, well, maybe they got their money worth.
And he finished third, by the way, in the Defensive Player of the Year voting.
Oh, nice. Well, the reason why I'm looking at these interceptions is Quandre Diggs is tied for fourth as far as interceptions this year. I mean, he very quietly. You know, and I just with him and Jamal Adams coming back, I thought Diggs had a good year. I mean, it wasn't super obvious, and, you know, a lot of times the safety is just there to, you know, make sure, keep everything in front of you. But I feel like going into last year, that was maybe the biggest question mark is safety. I mean, that's what I think has been really all about Pete Carroll's defenses is the safety play. Hadn't been the same. You know, with Leno Hill and Tedrick Thompson, and now you've got these two guys. I don't know, maybe just not talked about enough that how good this duo is with Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs.
Oh, agreed, because, again, Diggs gets the turnovers and Adams gets the sacks. You know, Adams does need to improve on some of his pass coverage. I think we all accept that, but he's such a good player. And I think you brought up the point yesterday for the 2022 cap, how few players have big money. Well, what did you say? It was like Jason Myers is like third highest behind Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner. And so that gives you the idea if they want to do a $15 million deal on Jamal Adams and he's willing to take it and you can get that cap number in that $7 or $8 million range and save some cap space, you know, push more money into future years and more cap into future years, that's something they can do. And then, of course, after this season, then they can try to work on trying to get Diggs to an extension.
John, the 425 says, can you please ask John if he thinks Earl Thomas will find a team?
I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of wondering. I mean, I think he got it in his mind. Of course, you got a lot of teams that don't have interest in him. Dallas didn't have interest in him. Houston didn't have interest in him. A lot of teams didn't. And you also got the idea that he would be insulted to go on a team and sign it to be on the practice squad and wait a few weeks to, you know, be able to get on the field. But, I mean, he's certainly good enough. And then what you wonder about is that, you know, two spots and two teams that are looking for safeties have guys that have coached them before. Because then you wonder, can Dan Quinn talk Jerry Jones into bringing him to Dallas? Because Xavien Woods is going to be up as a free agent, and they're not real good at the safety position. And then also with the Las Vegas Raiders, you got Gus Bradley, and their safety position is very much in flux. In fact, I think they're going to end up cutting LaMarcus Joyner, who they signed as a big free agent 2 years ago. So I think those could be two possibilities, and we'll see where it goes.
Hey, John, I'm looking at Dee Ford and the story about him that he may not be healthy for the start of the 2021 season. And Matt Maiocca of NBC Sports Bay Area.com said that he has an injury guarantee. It means like $11 million of his base salary becomes fully guaranteed if he's still on the Niners roster April 1st. What do you think is going to happen there with him?
I mean, they may try to trade him, but I don't think anybody's going to try to pick him up in a trade. I mean, because they're going to be stuck.
I'm trying to remember what his injury was, John. Sorry to interrupt you.
I think it was an ankle or something like that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you go back, probably the knee, because remember that the knee was a problem in his last year at Kansas City. It was a big problem. So it's probably more of a knee injury than anything else. Not like an ACL, but again, a bad knee. And remember, we saw this happen before with Colin Kaepernick. because they had to keep Colin Kaepernick on the roster because he had an injury that carried over past on an injury guarantee. And, you know, if this happens, and it sure sounds like it's going to happen, they're in deep trouble because, again, you know, they needed to get rid of him like they needed to get rid of Kwame Alexander, off-injured linebacker who went to New Orleans in the trade, and then they brought in Kiko Alonso and then cut him. But, you know, if they have to now scrape for more $11 million, that's even going to be tougher for them against the cap.
John, the 206 said, speaking of former Seahawks linemen, what kind of year did George Fant have with the Jets?
Average. I mean, you know, it's average to, you know, not great because, you know, nobody on that line did well. Well, I mean, the left tackle did, the first-round pick. I mean, he did well, but it was really a tough year for all the offensive linemen. Because remember, they brought in four new starters, you know, three in free agency, a left tackle in the draft, and their line did not do well. Sam Darnold got destroyed. They didn't do hardly anything rushing the football. So it really didn't turn out too well. But, you know, it wasn't like he was bad. I just say average right now.
All right. John, you doing your show tomorrow?
Yes, from 8 until 11, taking your phone calls.
Taking phone calls 8 to 11 tomorrow, and then we'll talk to you on Monday, John.
All right, sounds good.
All right, if you missed any of today's cold, hard facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, have the Rams already dictated the offseason moves of the Seahawks? Talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, we've got Mean Texts. It is Friday. It's what we do every Friday. For those of you new to the program, you guys tend to just do it on your own. We never need to prompt you, really. You just send in mean things to us. And we unveil them on Friday, the most creative ones.
You know, it allows you to say, oh, was that a mean text? When somebody offers some criticism, yeah. I can just say, oh, well, it's just a mean text. Well, it's Tuesday, so probably not.
No, I meant every word of what I just said. Exactly. Idiot. How do you have a job? You don't know anything. So, yeah, you can send those in, and we'll do that in the 5 o'clock hour, and then we'll sweep the dial coming up in less than 15 minutes. And, you know, it's interesting, as Mike notes on here, and I remember hearing about this, back in the heyday of Peyton Manning, back when he was dominant, before all the neck procedures and everything that was going on, you would hear about other teams in the AFC South sort of drafting or building their roster to sort of counter him in what they were doing. And I don't know if that was happening in the AFC East with Brady. If they were trying, it wasn't working because they just won every year. But with the Rams bringing in Stafford, which we've debated that, and I don't think he's as good as everybody thinks. He might be an upgrade over Goff. He certainly could be more explosive, but I don't think you're getting a young version of Tom Brady or a young Peyton Manning here. I'm not fearful of that. But do you think the Seahawks look at what the 49ers do or what the Rams do or what the Cardinals do and say, okay, we got to play these teams twice a year in order to succeed in this division and come out on top or be in competition for this division. We need to counter what they've done. And obviously each team's doing something different, but maybe the one they think is going to be the lead. If they think the Rams are going to be the dominant team, that defense, we've got to figure out a way against that Ram defense. So what we're going to do is counter it by bringing in X player. Do you think they do that? Or do you think they look at the roster and just go, man, we had a hard time on the O-line, or boy, our cornerbacks, that's a concern. We got to address that. They just look at what their needs are versus anybody versus specifically the NFC West.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's two guys in the NFC West that I think you probably do keep in mind. And what we're talking about here, we're talking about extra meeting players. Russell Wilson, you know, I feel like other teams know, and not so much now, but and Kyler Murray, when you have a running quarterback, that's a huge nightmare. So, yeah, you're trying to get, you know, some speed, you know, a pass rush, things like that. And then, you know, with Aaron Donald is absolutely an extra meeting guy. And you think about when you're drafting offensive linemen, you know, can this guy handle a guy like that? So, yeah, I think it's pretty rare because usually, you know, if you're in a division where you got Lamar Jackson for example. You know, it's a vastly different preparation that week than it is for, you know, if you're playing Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, if you're the Cleveland Browns, you're going, I go from Roethlisberger, I know exactly where he's going to be. And Lamar Jackson, you have no idea. It's that makes it difficult. It's two different types of quarterbacks. But, yeah, I would say Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, and Aaron Donald right now. I don't think Matthew Stafford is an extra meeting guy by any means. Mm-hmm. And whoever the 49ers come up with, probably not going to be. But a running quarterback and then a just dominant defensive tackle, yeah, you probably are thinking about.
But do you think about Bosa? Hey, how do we deal with Bosa when he's healthy with the Niners? Or how do we deal with defensively, George Kittle? How do we deal with him?
Yeah, you want to be able to single a guy like that up. But, I mean, look, I think for the most part, it's in the back of your mind, but for the most part, you're just trying to build a team that, you know, what your philosophy is and where you're going. You're not necessarily in the front of your mind going, hey, that guy can block Aaron Donald. Well, yeah. Because, number one, nobody can.
Yeah, right, right. And the 360 chimes in, and again, you guys can text in 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. No, Bob, the Seahawks don't do that. Otherwise, what about their O-line? All those teams have great pass rushers in our division. I would say no, thanks. So my question isn't so much have they succeeded in doing that. They've made moves, I would assume, that they think could help contain, not stop Aaron Donald, because I don't think anybody goes in there with the idea, oh, we got this guy handled. But maybe they've made moves they think could slow down Donald or could slow down Bosa. Or on the other side of the ball, that we're going to do something to counter what this guy does, whether it's somebody like Stafford or it doesn't mean it works, but right. Have they made moves that they think are in response to what the other teams in their division have done? There's a difference between making the move and making a move that works.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's kind of the conversation we've had this week about whether or not the Seahawks have addressed offensive line. They've tried to, but look, it's not worked out. And again, we were talking earlier about this. You know, Mark Glowinski was here, and now he's a starter on that Indy. You know, so maybe a lot of it had to do with Tom Cable and, you know, the way he thought. He had a different philosophy, and I feel like, you know, remember we had Howard Mudd on. He just totally disagreed with that philosophy about, you know, Tom Cable saying that, hey, look, these guys aren't playing. You know, it's a problem coming from college because you don't have a lot of offensive linemen that are down in a three-point stance. You know, there's no quarterback under center. There's not a lot of downhill blocking. It's a lot of, you know, zone blocking, kind of passive stuff. You know, playing there, you know, a lot of passing in general. So you're pass blocking, which is kind of a passive movement. And we talked to Ray Roberts about that, you know, you're being kind of passive. You're backing up and, you know, you're just trying to keep the guy at bay, whereas you come downhill and, you know, you in run blocking and you're trying to kill the guy. So, but that philosophy I don't think worked. I'm not sure. Where is Tom Cable? Do we know?
Where is he in
I'm
Vegas?
I'm not sure where Tom Cable is.
Where did he go?
I'm not sure if he went
somewhere
back there.
Floating around.
Yeah, but I mean, and I like Tom, and I thought, you know, that there was something to what he was saying.
Raiders.
Yeah, so.
Raiders.
But he's working down there. But, yeah, I mean, look, as far as, you know, building your team, you're trying to build. You've got an idea of who you want to be. So you draft a guy like Chris Carson because you want to be a punishing running team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, it's a little bit in the back of your mind, but for the most part, you're just trying to build your team the way you best know how. And it's going to be tough this year and in the next couple of years. We'll see how much access they get next year. Is there going to be a combine? We're going to have a full college football season, all that, but this draft is going to be one to keep your eye on coming out of, you know, the pandemic and all the restrictions and all the stuff that didn't take place.
The combine, the talent evaluation, just the game tape you don't have from this year.
Yeah, I mean, you might get some guys that are just ballers coming out of some of these, you know, teams. What did the Huskies play, like four games, five games? Weren't they 3-2 or something like that?
Something goofy like that.
Yeah, I mean, and then you got Alabama that played 11, Ohio State, so this is going to be an interesting year. I'll tell you what, these scouts, man, they're going to earn their money this year. That's going to be difficult. And, you know, I was just thinking about Scott Fitterer, who just took the job in Carolina. You know, it's going to be a rough first year for him there. But I think everybody's in the same boat. It's just that I feel like some teams are going to hit. You know, they're going to take a guy that nobody heard of, and a guy ends up being a total baller. But you're also going to see a lot of these first, second rounders that are going to fold.
Yep. You guys can text in, as I said, 710-710. I'm taking a little blowback on Stafford here. Bob, are you an ostrich? I think you've had your head in the sand when it comes to Stafford. He's way better than Goff. I didn't say he wasn't better than Goff. I think he is better. I think he's got more talent. I know he's definitely got a stronger arm. He's got a cannon arm. I've watched him. I've seen him over the years. I think he's overrated. I don't think he's an elite quarterback. I think he's a good quarterback. The way he's talked about is almost in the same breath as what we consider the elite quarterbacks in this league, and he's not. He just isn't. I'm sorry. He's only had 2 years in his entire 12-year career where he didn't throw double-digit interceptions, and both of those were injury-shortened years. Right. He's only had 1 year where he's had a quarterback rating over 100, and he only played 8 games that year. He's completed 62% of his passes through his entire career. He's got a career quarterback rating of 89. I think he's good. I don't think he's great. I think, like I said, just to clarify in case they missed it, I think it's overstated how great he is. I think he's good, but not as great as he's talked about. And I don't think Goff is as bad as he's talked about. I don't think he's great either, but I don't think he's useless the way that people just talk about him like he's just got no value. They got to the Super Bowl with the guy. As much as McVay is calling the plays and in his ear, he's got to complete those passes. He's got to make those plays. So Goff has some level of ability to get his team to a Super Bowl. So he couldn't possibly be as bad as people talk about. And he's had more seasons where he's had a quarterback rating over 100 as compared to Stafford, although I think Stafford is a more talented quarterback.
It's shaping up to be one of the more interesting years as far as quarterbacks go.
Yeah.
Wentz to Indy now. I mean, that is going to be worth watching.
That one's more curious. I think we know what's going to happen with Stafford and Goff, don't we? The Goff's going to a much worse situation. The idea that he's going to be better in Detroit is not even realistic to me. And maybe individually he does things better on some level, but as a team, they're not going to be.
Well, it'll be more interesting. What'll be more interesting to you, Stafford in with the Rams or Goff with the Lions?
Stafford
with
the Rams.
This one.
Because I think we know what's going to happen in Detroit. I think that's a bad team. I think it's a bad situation.
Is it just going to be that they're a bad team, or is it going to be that Jared Goff can't even function without Sean McVay in his headset?
I don't know. We'll see. I think we're saying it's probably going to be bad, but then we'll have to determine, well, why is that? Is it because of him, because he can't function without somebody in his headset, or because it's the team around him, the environment? I think Stafford is going to a better situation, certainly, than Detroit. Mm-hmm. I just don't put him in the category of Brady when he was younger, or Patrick Mahomes, or Russell, or I don't think he's in that category, is all I'm saying about him. But I think it is an upgrade at quarterback for the Rams. I'll make that clear.
Absolutely. And it's kind of scary, a little bit dangerous. What year is this for Stafford?
13th, I believe.
Wow.
I think he's played 12 years in the league, I believe. All right, coming up, we'll sweep the dial around some new developments in the NFL. That's coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
The news just broke that Carson is gone. And, you know, this hurts because I can't even put on his jersey right now because I just had surgery, and you're still my hero. You always will be.
Wow, that's very heartfelt. That's Giovanni Hamilton, a young Eagles fan who's battling a rare genetic disorder, releases that heartfelt video to Carson Wentz, and I would imagine that's unfortunately probably a rarity. I was watching NFL Network either yesterday or the day before. I think it was yesterday, and they were playing audio of people calling in to Philly Sports Radio.
I think
you might imagine how those comments were going, Dave, and none of them matched that.
Get him out of here.
Oh, just, you were this. You were never going to win with you. Should have kept Nick Foles and blah, blah, blah. And you were weak and your attitude. I mean, it was just, you know, what you would expect from Philly. But something like that's very, very nice, very heartfelt.
What's the ESPN feature that makes everybody cry You know, remember the I can't remember the guy's name, but they did one where
Roy Firestone,
those Tom interviews Rinaldi.
Tom Rinaldi.
Yeah, he left ESPN now, but
oh really?
He's at Fox.
Oh,
they
I
paid him a lot of money to make those people cry now.
Yeah, because going way back to Roy Firestone when he'd do those interviews.
Well, they had like these documentaries on like this dog. Remember the stray dog that followed that competitive race team where they get in a canoe and there's this dog that was like on death's door that followed him the whole way. And then the guy ends up adopting him and take him back to Sweden. I mean, if you watch that, you will cry. It's one of those kind of things. But earlier, I think maybe his rookie year or second year, there was a story of this little kid named, they called him the Dutch Destroyer, Lucas Custers. And, you know, he had a wristband. And somehow I think Wentz ran into this little kid who had like a rare disease and at the hospital, and then they just became friends. Mm-hmm. And so he wore, they didn't even know about it, but the Dutch Destroyer, the kid, they had these supportive wristbands, and they were watching a game, and they knew that Carson Wentz had, you know, met him and everything, and they looked on TV. This is the first time they found out about it, that they had one of his wristbands on.
The kid's wristbands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Dutch Destroyer, and that's what it said on it. And it was really, really cool. And he breaks down crying. Everybody's crying. I mean, it's just it was a really cool story about the kind of guy that Carson Wentz is. And I know he's getting trashed there and everything. And I'm wishing him the best in Indianapolis. But he took a lot of his own personal time. He brought the kid in. He brought the family in, had him to games, all kinds of stuff. So all the bad stuff you hear about him there, he's a good guy, and hopefully it'll get him back to the point where he was when he was seen as the second pick in the draft.
I take Philly angst with a grain of salt because they torched Donovan McNabb, they torched Andy Reid, they torched Carson Wentz. I mean, that's what they do. I don't think them torching a player tells you who that player or coach is. That's just the Philly way. Yeah. And all three of those guys, by all accounts, good guy, Andy Reid. Everybody loves Andy Reid. They were torching him. Get him out of here. He can't coach. He'll never win the big one, blah, blah, blah. Same with Donovan and now Carson Wentz. So I think it's on some, I don't want to paint with broad strokes, but it's kind of par for the course in Philly.
They even call out their players when there's a fire.
Yeah, that's right.
Unlike Aguilar. Were catching babies, unlike Aguilar.
Needs to be Watson, his agent, David Mulligetta, Nick Casario, the new general manager, David Culley, the new coach. And if they want to bring around offensive coordinator Tim Kelly, who's really close to Watson, do that and have Watson explain to them exactly why he wants out. And then have Casario and Culley explain to Watson exactly what their plan is to rebuild around him. And my belief is then both sides go back and think about it. And if Watson is still adamant about sitting out and can convince them that he's willing to lose millions and millions in fines and salary, then I think they should trade him, because if they don't trade him and they ever do in the future, they're not going to get anywhere near what they would have gotten right now when he's coming off such a great season.
That's John McClain from the Houston Chronicle, longtime beat writer for the Texans, on what should happen between Watson and the Texans organization. That was on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning. I know Clayton keeps saying he's not going to get traded. He's got a no trade, which favors the organization. it favors him, by the way, for anybody unclear on that. I just can't imagine they're going to be able to work this out to where he's all of a sudden going to be pacified, that they're going to have this meeting. He's going to come out of it going, you know what, guys, I'm on board. I love the Texans. This is where I want to be. And what can be said that hasn't been said by this point? It feels like it's sort of a runaway train, and he's made it very clear what his position is. And I tend to agree with McClain. At this point, even if you're a Texans fan, you don't want to see the guy go. It feels untenable. Get what you can bring back a boatload right now for this guy. He's one of the bright young stars. He is a franchise quarterback, an elite quarterback who's in his mid-20s. I mean, you could get a haul in return. You better do it. He's right before the value goes down, or maybe he has a down season, or maybe he misses games because he's holding out, or what have you. Why let it get to that point when it feels like there is no turnaround here? It feels like everybody is cemented in their position.
Well, in Houston, I mean, look, they may need the commissioner to step in, because just for the good of the game, you're talking about, you know, and it's funny, until a few weeks ago when this came up, you know, I didn't realize, I wasn't quite aware of Deshaun Watson's numbers. Have you looked at him? I mean, he was 70% completion, and he led the team. He led the league in yardage and average, 8.9 average, and then 4,823 yards, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions.
And they still only won 4 games.
Yeah, and I think he's got the second-best quarterback rating. So, I mean, this guy needs to be out there. He needs to be on the field playing football next year. And if the, you know, the way Salisbury described it, like if this is a business, they'd be boarded up.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past them to just, you know, say, well, you're staying here and we're going to fine you. And
if you're a fan out there, what would you want them to do? Knowing his position now, I mean, doesn't it feel like, man, get everything you can for him because he does not want to be here. And there's no part of it that looks like he's willing to change that opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's he's more flexible than we're giving him credit for, but by every account we hear from there, it sounds like he is – it's definitive. It's no. Here's – I don't want to play here. I don't want to be here. And if that's the case, aren't you as the Texans going, all right, let's load up those draft picks. Bring it. Let's hear the best offers.
Right. Hey, by the way, he also – Russell was sacked 52 times. Deshaun Watson was sacked 49 times. So pretty close to Russ.
Yeah.
Did he complain at the end of the year about being sacked? I don't remember that.
I think his bigger issues were with the organization.
Yeah,
overall.
He had other bigger fish to
bigger,
fry.
Bigger issues there.
It's a frustrating feeling. I remember, you know, with the Rams, and I went and had dinner with management, and me and, you know, my agent, the GM, the vice president, and the head coach, and we're all sitting at dinner, and we knew that the relationship had run its course, and everybody was pretty much understanding, but the head coach said something, and it was Rich Brooks, and he said, oh, no, you're my guy, and we're going to use you, and at that point, it was a bold-faced lie, and even the GM had to say, well, you know, wait a minute, we're going to consider something. So it was just a bad place to be in, and there was a lot of animosity, and so the best thing was a trade, and it, you know, helped both sides out.
It's Jerome Bettis talking about, I assume, his breakup with the Rams and then going to the Steelers and just talking about what may happen with the Steelers and Big Ben. Because we talked about that really lukewarm endorsement, or just wasn't even an endorsement, really just kind of what we heard about Goff before he got traded from their GM. Remember, they said, well, as of now, he's a member of the Rams, you know, and people saying, well, his salary is too punitive. You can't trade that. And his response is, well, anything can happen. And you're just like, wow, you kind of had the same exact tone in Pittsburgh about Big Ben.
Yeah. You know what's funny about this? At the end of my career, I forgot all about this until I heard the boss talking there, Jerome Bettis. I worked out with him. It was the beginning of his career, and it was the very end of mine. We had the same trainer. And I remember him complaining about Rich Brooks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just going on and on. Oh, this guy's like, you know, high school Harry. He's coming in here with this college stuff, and he wanted this and that. And he references the breakup there with him and the Rams when he was in St. Louis and then ends up going to Pittsburgh. But, yeah, he's right about that. I mean, you know, there's nobody likes the coach that they go out on.
Yeah.
You know, like if
– Shanahan.
If you're – for me, yeah, for me, Mike Shanahan. Yeah, I like that you know that, Bob.
Yeah.
We could have done that in that couples quiz last week.
I would have won even bigger. I would know. Have been huge.
Maybe Bob and I should have a couples quiz every week just to make everybody feel uncomfortable.
Well, we're gonna make them feel comfortable now because they wanted to express their opinion when we were talking about the hypothetical. We threw out if you could pick any three players out there in the league. Money's no issue. You could just draw three players from whichever teams you want and plop them on this Seahawks roster as it sits right now. Who would they be? Who would be your three? We asked Clayton. We asked Mark Schlereth. Dave and I answered. Mike answered. So it's your turn to answer. We did get some text. You guys can text in, but we'll open up the phone lines. 421-3776, toll free, 866-979-3776. You get three players from any team, any position you want. Who are they? 421-3776, toll-free, 866-979-3776. We'll come back with your calls next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.